What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you into a special edition of Meet Me at Mutual, because we're crossing the streams tonight a little bit. I have with me, as I'm Daniel Shopdahl, C70 at the bat, at C70, you know all that hopefully, but I've got with me my regular co-host, Alan Medlock, a Medlock1 on Twitter, and the Redbird Daily, but we also have, as a special guest, my Gateway to Baseball Heaven co-star, well, actually only star, Tara Wellman, who is at Tara Wellman on Twitter, and Bird Seeds on the YouTubes. And we're going to, this is like, you know, Oriole Park at Camden Yards. This is like Meet Me at Mutual at Baseball, at Gateway to Baseball Heaven or something like that. We're just mixing them all together.
At the Gateway, I don't know.
I don't
trying.
Know.
Yeah, trying. It's not happening. Yeah.
I don't want you thinking too closely at any analogy right. that I put out there, because it's going to break down fast. We're coming together tonight to talk about the winter meetings and the activity that the Cardinals have actually done with it. For a while there, it kind of felt like these meetings were going to be a complete bust, that we were not going to see this, and we were going to have a whole lot of, well, they laid the groundwork, and here, you know, they can make a trade any day now. Which is some of what we're still hearing, but we did finally get a move yesterday, as the Cardinals, well, they finalized it today, completed a deal with the Marlins for Marcell Ozuna. Not the outfielder that we thought they would try to get from the Miami Marlins, or the outfielder that maybe we all kind of hoped for, but definitely a quality outfielder in and of himself. Cardinals give up Sandy Alcantara, Magnier Sierra, and a couple of other lower prospects, although I know Kyle Reese is kind of high on Zach Gallen, who also went in this deal. Alan, I'll start with you, and I know you and I have said on the show at times that Ozuna is probably third in the pecking order of the outfielders that the Marlins had, but third in the pecking order in Miami is still a whole lot better than some of the stuff the Cardinals had.
Yeah, that's completely how I felt. He was definitely of the wish list that I had. It would have went Stanton, Yelich, and Ozuna, which I was very high on Yelich. But we also had the side note of this, of Ozuna probably fits the team a little bit better. And just because it's going to be power. It's going to be a cleanup guy. And now you get the bonus of being the Gold Glove winner in left field. You remove, with the new alignment that they have, and going with Pham in center, reportedly going with Pham in center, and then Fowler in one of the corners, it makes much more sense. I wondered how they were going to fit it in with Ozuna, or with Yelich to play center, if they were to make that move, and then kind of move everything around. And then more importantly is, would the lineup work with him in it? Well, I think with Ozuna it makes a lot of sense, because you can just clean him up, and then you can base around that, and that's what they wanted. You know, that's and the power potential's there, especially for you know, his age. And now we're just banking on that wasn't a one-year wonder, which I don't think it was. I think that I think signs point to him having pretty sustained power numbers from here on out.
Tara, where do you come out of that? Because I think that, you know, I've seen some people on Twitter, and I think somewhat legitimately, say that if you don't buy into Ozuna's 2017, perhaps you shouldn't buy into Pham's 2017, that both of them kind of came out of nowhere, but still had that, you know, pedigree and some reasons to believe that that's something going on. Where do you think? Do you think he's a 330 home run hitter, or is this kind of a peak that we won't see again?
It's such a gamble to try to predict whether someone will have sustained success or not, because you know, you can see a guy who looks as comfortable as, let's say, Aledmys Diaz did 2 years ago, and then the year immediately following that, it's like they've never been able to hit anything that isn't a straight fastball. But at the same time, I would agree that I think whether you're talking about Tommy Pham or about Marcell Ozuna, it's not like they're just guys that have, that shot up out of nowhere that no one had ever heard of before. I mean, these are guys who have, a little bit of a track record. And I know that with Tommy Pham, it's a bit of a different story because much of his track record is not necessarily success at the major league level, but injuries have prevented that, and some of the guys who've played ahead of him have eliminated a real spot for him. Last year just became a matter of him not taking no for an answer, not giving them much of a choice. Now, let's be realistic about that. The reason that he had the spotlight to claim is that there were a lot of guys who didn't live up to what the expectations of them were last year. So I think that it's one thing to see sort of a flash in the pan like Aledmys Diaz was, who came up as such an unknown, and then the league adjusted to him, and the success was just as quickly gone, to seeing someone who maybe had the year of their career last year, like Ozuna did, but has some sort of track record behind that to show the progress, to show the ability, to show the skill set, and to show that he can make adjustments and continue to play at a pretty successful pace. So it's impossible to say whether he's going to replicate last year's numbers or not, but based on what the Cardinals' needs were, I think it's a pretty solid get, particularly when you look at what they gave up to get him, or maybe more significantly, what they did not give up to get him.
Yeah, and that's a big point that we do want to get into is the Marlins side of this. But, Ozuna seems to be a guy that, you know, he came into the majors at 22. And as far as, you know, looking at his stats, I don't think he's ever returned to the minors. So he's learned a little bit at the big league level. He's hitting that peak. Now, I mean, just my gut feeling, and I don't know much about him except for what we're looking at the stat line, but I doubt he's a 300 hitter, again.
Sure.
But if he hits, you know, well, baseball reference here, his projection for next year is 283 with 26 homers and 86 RBI, and that's more
I'd
of
take
a
that.
Yeah, I think that's more of a thump than we have seen in a more consistent power presence that we can have in the middle of the lineup. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, you look at that line and you say, well, that could have been Stephen Piscotty, who we'll get to in a little bit, but the fact is this is probably definitely more likely. You know, this is not an outer reaches, which 25, 26 home runs is probably, yeah, at the most you would ever think of Piscotty, whereas this guy, I mean, legitimately has 40 home run power. I don't know that he'll get there, but he definitely is going to get closer to it than probably anybody else on this team until you tell Tommy Pham that, and then he'll go out and hit 40. But anyway, so, Alan, let's talk about what the Cardinals did not have to give up. They gave up a prospect in Alcantara that winds up being the top prospect in the Marlins system as soon as he gets into their organization. They gave up another guy in Sierra that I think was top five or top six for them. But neither one of them, well, Alcantara may have been top 10 in the Cardinals. Definitely neither one of them were top five in the Cardinals system, which is notably superior. Were you a little surprised that they could do a deal like this and not give up a Flaherty or something like that?
Yeah, very surprised. I think we all felt the same way about just, okay, 2 years, they looked disinterested at times on the field, and everybody was ready for that change. Any deal they had, I was excited about. If it didn't include Weaver or Reyes, just because I felt like they meant so much to the team this year. And I would probably even wavered on those two a little bit if I was convinced they were going to get more pitching. But from Flaherty down, I was like, whoever they want, that's fine. So whenever I saw they were getting him, I was naturally thinking that it was going to be, Flaherty or Hudson. So when I saw that it was Alcantara, I was like, wait a second, if that's the tent pole on this, they're going to get away pretty well. So I was impressed because I didn't think Sierra had a spot anymore. And, you know, Gallen, I knew Kyle was high on him, but other than that, I thought it was a steal because I didn't know how much those two. I know you have to give a little bit away with it, with Alcantara or Alcantara, however you say it, I thought the return I thought the Cardinals really needed to pat themselves on the back about what they had to give up for, you know, a star in Ozuna.
Tara, it feels like, even though Alcantara, which I think Alan's right, that's how it should be said, and I was wrong. It happens a lot. Alcantara is probably the name that most of us focus on. It seems like, at least for, if you read through the Twitter, that Sierra was the bigger loss. A lot of people very high on Magnair Sierra for reasonable reasons, but it just seems to me that, Sierra probably isn't playing in the major leagues until 2019 at the best with all the outfielders in front of him. It just doesn't feel like it's that much of a loss for the Cardinals.
Yeah, I think the exposure is the most likely reason for the reaction, to Sierra rather than Alcantara. And I say that because, Sierra was a great story this last season. He provided, some unforgettable highlights in a season where there weren't a whole lot of unforgettable highlights. So I think just, and I even said as much on Twitter that, I need a minute for the sentimental side of me to get over Sierra being the guy that goes, but then the analytical side kicks in and I realize, he doesn't have a spot on this team, especially with some of the moves that they've made. And while his defense in center field is appealing, as is his speed on the bases, he doesn't fit into the Cardinals picture for the 2018 season. And if you can go out and get a guy who does and sort of hedge your bets on whether or not Sierra ever develops enough offensively to be a leading center fielder, then I think you got to take that chance, especially when you have, you've got guys like Harrison Bader who are waiting in the wings. You have, I think I said it was somewhere around 742 outfielders the other day. when you've got Tyler O'Neill, when you're stockpiling these outfielders who are going to be major league ready here fairly quickly, you can't keep all of them, and Sierra seems like one that, I don't know that expendable is the right word, but when you're trying to throw in enough names, enough guys with a little bit of experience to get a solid return, it makes a lot of sense. And, the reaction, like I said, I think it's the exposure and the moments that he created last season, but I want to just throw this out there because I would say that the dealings in trying to get a Stanton trade done may have significantly impacted the minimal return for Ozuna, because if the Cardinals had Flaherty on the table for Stanton, they're certainly not going to put him on the table for Ozuna. The price probably went way down to get one of those lesser outfielders. And the Marlins knew that after a long drawn out conversation on Stanton. So then if you center that on Alcantara and bring in Sierra because of the major league experience that he has, you don't have to include some of those other names because you're not getting Stanton.
Yeah, I think that's big. Although there is that fear, I think, to some degree, that the Cardinals had gotten so accustomed to the idea that they were going to lose X amount of talent for Stanton that even if they backed it off of Sierra, they may not back it off enough. Now, I don't think that happened. I think this is a reasonable return for that, but you could have seen them easily saying, well, we already kind of had this earmarked to be gone, so why not spend it here? Thankfully, they didn't. You wonder, and I think I saw somebody on Twitter mention this as I started to look it up. You look at you wonder if Sierra's season had flipped, if people would be as excited or disappointed that he was gone, I guess. He ended the season on an 0-for-12. If he starts his career at 0-for-12 and then he hits, 375 or whatever to end it, in September, maybe people are thinking, well, he had a little bit, but, I just think he caught the imagination at the right moment. And of course, speed is, I think Cardinal fans, especially of a certain age and generation, are always going to value speed perhaps more than current baseball trends would allow for, just because of what the 80s did. But we've seen with Billy Hamilton, you know, Hamilton has finally started to develop a little bit, but for years there, I mean, just don't walk him, and you know, his speed doesn't matter. He's not going to hit the ball hard, and he's going to hit it on the ground. And there were some Fangraphs report that showed, you know, Sierra, you know, hit quality and how hard he hit it and all that stuff. He was down there with not only pitchers, but bad hitting pitchers. so you wonder. I mean, again, he's young. He should have played, you know, he should never have been in the major leagues this year. He's got a lot to develop. Miami saw the best of him, you know, probably went, you know, what, 6-for-11 or whatever it was in that series. So maybe that's why they wanted him.
Another thing too, I thought that he really took advantage of the circumstances because if you guys remember, that's all anyone ever talked about out of spring. And then you heard the rumors of, a manager from another team or a front office guy from another team asking, hey, is he going to make your ball club? Mm-hmm. I've wholeheartedly always thought it was Florida that asked about that because they were the ones that would see him the most being in camp with them. Mm-hmm. So I thought it made a lot of sense that his name was brought up in this because he would have the most exposure with them. A, he did have that series with them, and he played the 11-12 games in the spring against them and had the good spring. Then the name started picking up a little bit more even after his minor league season last year. And I just think it was the circumstances played in his favor too a little bit. But I'm going to agree with you guys though. He was the piece they desperately needed because when he came up and they started winning, it was the fact that, man, they were so station to station at that time, they couldn't score any runs without hitting the ball out of the park.
Yeah.
That was bad. It was real bad.
Yeah, it was.
which is one of the reasons we're talking about getting an upgrade because, you know, the second half of the year, the offense was not as much of the problem. I don't know that you'd want to go into a postseason with it just because they didn't have that anchor. But, you know, the second half of the year when they were winning, you know, they put up a decent amount of runs on a regular basis. You know, cause Fowler was hitting the ball out of the ballpark seemed like every night and, you know, Pham was doing Pham things and, you know, Yadi Molina was recapturing his youth and things of that nature. So the offense clicked at least for most of the second half. But it still needed that anchor, and I think that's what Ozuna brings to the table. So, that should be fine. And like I think, Alan, you were saying earlier, it is nice, you know, when there was Stanton, it was like, do you bat him fourth? Do you bat him, you know, higher in the order, you know, whatever? Ozuna fits right there in that fourth spot. No matter, I don't think there's any doubt, no matter who they get, if they get anybody else for that lineup, Ozuna's gonna sit right there in that fourth spot, and that's good.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Alright. Either one of you have anything more to say on that deal?
I think it's just, it's been interesting watching the reactions from a fan base that desperately wanted some changes to take place.
Yeah.
Because it, as much as this fan base, and I can really speak to the Cardinals fan base because it's the only one I'm as invested but as much as these fans give John Mozeliak and company a hard time about hoarding prospects, they also seem to be the first to jump at him for giving up prospects that they didn't want to be gone. No, not those prospects.
Yeah, yeah.
but we haven't seen a whole lot of that. There were some people who thought, oh man, Sierra's in this deal. That's not great. But for the most part, it seems like everyone kind of sat back and went, huh, that's it? Mm-hmm. you gotta sort of tip your hat to John Mozeliak on that one because the Cardinals do have a lot of particularly pitching prospects that, have been rumored in some of these potential trades and are still rumored in some potential trades that the Cardinals are dealing with now. But I think it's very rare to see a deal like this go through where Cardinals fans kind of don't have anything bad to say about it.
You're exactly right because I worried and, you know, Daniel and I had talked about this on the show several times. I worried about the backlash of whoever they get outside of Stanton that's going to be a failure. I know we talked about that a little bit before we got on the show last night, but you're exactly right. I really thought, and I became really concerned when the when the return wasn't released as quick. You know, it was like an hour and a half, almost 2 hours before any of the names started leaking out. Well, what that told me eventually, and I kind of thought back about it, that the deal breaking was probably coming from the Marlins camp, and the Cardinals were keeping tight what was coming back. You know, because they work in the dark so much. And that was another point I want to bring up, is how impressed I've been about how out in the open they've worked on this. Because I've never seen this with Mazalek working in the daylight like he does this year. Because it's normally you don't know anything until it goes down, and that hadn't been the case. But I completely agree with you. That was, it's one of those to where I haven't heard any pushback on the trade, which I felt like it would be significant if it wasn't Stanton, regardless of who was going.
Yeah, I mean, it is a step down, and then Stanton, obviously, but it's still a very quality guy, but that doesn't.
But who isn't?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Well,
and we may get to one of those guys in a little bit.
Right.
But let's move on to the next thing the Cardinals did finalize, and they finalized the deal. They sent Stephen Piscotty out to Oakland, for two minor leaguers. You know, I hate this. I retweeted the pronunciation guide to Kyle Reese today, but I'm staying off of Twitter because of Last Jedi spoilers, so I can't actually go look it up. But it was, you know, they received, I believe it's Yaro Munoz and Max Schrock from the A's, both of which actually did wind up in the Cardinals' top 15 as they were re-ranked after losing prospects and then gaining these two guys. I think it's a little bit weird for me to see quality prospects coming back. Usually it's, you know, some level A guy that we're never going to hear from. And these guys, you know, there seems to be something about them, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Tara, this was, the big part around this, and it's something I think you and I've talked about, I know Alan and I've talked about, it really felt like the Cardinals wanted to get Stephen Piscotty out to California. It didn't have to be Oakland, but that was good because of his situation with his mother. Again, also because he was fourth, fifth, sixth on the depth chart. Now let's not go overboard with the kindness of the Cardinals' heart here. I mean, if he was a starting outfielder, they probably don't do this move, no matter what his mother's situation is. But they took that into account, and that was kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, you know, I think John Mozeliak's comments were something along the lines of, we had a couple of ways we could go with this, but with this being an option, sending him to a place where he's close to home was something that they were definitely interested in for more than baseball reasons. And, you know, we talk so much over the off seasons like this about the business of baseball. But Daniel, I know you and I have talked about this before, but the business of baseball is still people. And people have more going on in their lives than any of us realize. So, for the business side of baseball to give Stephen Piscotty an opportunity to be closer to his family at a time when that reasonably is one of the top priorities in his life. It's a great thing to see. There's a little bit of conflicting reports about whether or not this is what Stephen Piscotty wanted. Mm-hmm. but that aside, I think that he and his family can still appreciate the intention behind the Cardinals' decision in how they went about making that move, even if it was a move they were going to make, regardless of where he actually ended up.
Yeah, I think, and I've seen some references to that. I haven't seen anything detailed, but I have a feeling that it's Stephen Piscotty wanting to say, look, I'm not asking to be traded.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I have to be out here with my mother.
Look, this is the organization he came up in. These are the guys that he knows. This is as much home to him as anything right now. So it would be a lot for him to come out and say, yeah, I'd really actually like to leave here. Mm-hmm. So I think that whatever the quote may be, I would imagine some pretty conflicting emotions as far as that goes, which is totally understandable.
And you know what? These guys are competitors, and it didn't end on a high note for him.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
And that there's probably some saving face on that as well. And he would like to get back on it, and not in their eyes, they may feel like a failure. Well, we know that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that he would have liked to have had a better you know, taste in his mouth at the end of his St. Louis time, and nothing. Not the organization.
I'm incredibly proud of St. Louis Cardinals fans right now about how they've handled this situation. Whenever Slusser's came out or comment on Twitter today, where she reposted that, and then when, what Billy Bean said, I don't know if you guys saw that, but it was one of those almost bringing a tear to your eye. I was like, oh man, I'm pretty proud to be able to say that I'm a part of this. And I forgot my main point now, but I just wanted to get that off my chest. But I had something else to say, and I can't remember what it was.
It'll come back around probably. So I think that, and you're right. Like Tara said, you know, I was just listening today. I haven't finished it yet. The Jim Hayes' podcast where he's talking to Randall Grichuk, and Randall Grichuk and Steve Muscotti are ridiculous. You know, very very close. Have been for, you know, as they've come up through the organization. You know, we've seen that, and so, you know, to have that, you know, break up, if you will, is got to be tough on both sides. You know, like you said, Piscotty knows a lot of guys here. He was not actively trying to leave, but I think that he appreciates the fact that if he was going to leave, they didn't trade him to Tampa Bay, where he's even farther away in a different league, or someplace like that, or maybe to a different organization that might not have been as understanding, although probably most organizations are these days. I think they're somewhat more open and understanding, like you said, that there are people involved. But anyway, and hopefully he'll go out there. I think, and it's one of those rare times that I think everybody hopes that he goes out and just does great. You know, they hope he goes out and has a great season, and that kind of revitalizes him. And you think about, you know, I know Alan, you and I talked about it back when it happened. When they went out on that road trip to California last year, and they played the Padres and the Giants, they were close to the end of the year, and he hit like 500 on that road trip. And I gotta feel like some of that was being home, feeling like he was contributing and helping and getting a little bit of focus that way. So hopefully that will continue to be the case. You know, again, on these prospects coming back, I think they're, a shortstop and a second baseman maybe. I don't know a whole lot, but, you know, they've hit pretty well in the minor leagues. They may be seeing some time in Memphis or, definitely maybe one in Memphis, one in Springfield. Alan, it seems like it's a pretty good return for a situation that, you know, there probably wasn't a whole lot of, you know, people knocking on the door for him.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another move where I thought has been widely accepted, but I thought there would be a little bit of pushback that they didn't get somebody big league quality, especially when there's still some holes to patch up in the bullpen. But it does seem like the return is good, and the general consensus on the return is good. So I think it worked well for both organizations and for Piscotty personally. What I was going to say, and it did just pop back into me, is after seeing how everybody supported this all around, I feel really bad about some of the things I said about Piscotty last year. I know that some of our jobs on here is to not be so – is to be impartial a little bit, but I was pretty rough on him at times, and I kind of want to take a little of that back now.
I can't argue. He was pretty rough on him.
I mean, I did potentially call him the worst base runner of all time, so you're not alone.
Oh, yeah.
See, Carpenter. I took Matt Carpenter. Yeah. That's
I believe that the numbers were in my favor on that one, though. So, listen, he can be the worst base runner of all time if he just hits, you know, gap doubles and doesn't have to guess.
y'all are just terrible people. Let's just, you know that. So, no.
That's fair. That's fair. That's probably fair.
Anyway, but
we all know that already.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, that's what we hear a lot, you know, about all of us is we're terrible. So, okay. So, yeah, that's done. It freed up. One of the reasons they got the people that they did was, the 40-man roster is full. And moving Piscotty off allowed for Ozuna to come back, which is part of the reason I think that trade was not finalized, is they wanted to get Piscotty moved off so they didn't have to cut somebody else off the 40-man roster. Why they continue to protect Mike Myers, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like he is worth.
Listen, next year there's going to be some story about Mike Myers, and you're going to be here at the end of the year saying, "I feel really bad about what I said about Mike Myers."
Yeah, Tara and I will get.
I am not going to feel bad about it because you know it's accurate. I will say I'm wrong. I was wrong with Jose Martinez. That's the same situation I was in last year with Jose Martinez. I'm like, why are they keeping him on the 40-man roster? Well, apparently there's a reason. I just haven't seen that with Myers.
Well, you know one thing? I don't think we can overreact to anybody on the roster right now because they may not be here tomorrow night.
Man, that's awful.
You know what I'm saying? There are so many things in the air right now. There's just no telling it.
Well, that's a good place to transition off of this into what didn't happen but still could happen now that the winter meetings are over. It's funny. I was reading some stuff about how the winter meetings are basically becoming – I don't want to say passe, but, you know, they don't need to be in the rooms together. In fact, they're still not. They're sitting in their own office texting and calling and stuff like that. And, you know, they're just doing basically meeting stuff. It's not as nearly as active as it has been in past. I think anytime you get a whole bunch of GMs together, it's got a chance for it. But, so there's still a number of things still up in the air. And the two things that we hear the most, and again, there could be a lot of things that we don't hear about, but the two things that seem to be the ones that the most interest and the most smoke with fire, hopefully, one is the fact that the Cardinals have at least put in some sort of offer for Manny Machado from the Orioles. And then there is another issue with the fact that there's a seemingly endless myriad of possibilities with Tampa Bay. depending on who goes where and what they need and all that kind of stuff. Let's talk about Machado first because that's fun. Well, Tampa Bay's fun too, but, you know, dreaming on Machado is something
we've Chris Archer's fun, so, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, but continue, Machado. Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there, right. Don't get me off on the track.
Sorry.
I'll have to catch up with Alan's thought here in a minute, you know, and get back on that track. Manny Machado, who, as Tara pointed out before the show started, about 2 weeks ago, we never actually believed would be on the trade market, a free agent at the end of the year, going to make lots of money from somebody. The Orioles seem to be willing to play out the string, but now they seem to have kind of shifted positions. Maybe they finally got some offers that were interesting. Cardinals are in that position. They have... I'm reading MLB trade rumors. Apparently, they have not made a formal offer because there is not going to be, most likely, a chance to negotiate with Machado before the deal is finalized. But they have been talks. The Orioles are supposedly wanting a couple of major league pitchers or major league ready pitchers. That could change depending on who's offering what. Alan, I got to say, I'm... huge Machado fan. I was hoping that the Cardinals would get into that mix when he came into a free agency, but you know, there's the gamble. 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving up some talent for a guy that may walk at the end of the year, and we've seen that with Jason Hayward. Where do you come down on this?
Well, as much as I would love to have him, and you could have him as a shortstop or a third baseman, Hardy preferred shortstop, it's going to be elite with his bat play there, and he's such a stud. It would all be about the return to me, you know, because then I don't think you could get 1 year of Machado for a Weaver that's going to hurt your rotation now. You know, that goes back to the fact to where I think that you could probably, if you go Flaherty is the tent pole and then go from there for your one deal, I think you could probably afford to do that. But I don't want to let hurt from the rotation now, the 1 year and the hope. And now, talking out of both sides of my mouth, I understand that getting him in camp is probably the only chance they have at a long-term deal because they're not going to win any bidding wars in the open market unless he experiences it first. So I'm kind of torn. I still, like I said, like we talked about before the show, I still think that's kind of a pipe dream at this point, but at least they're talking and it sounds like, that Baltimore may be coming to their senses to get something for him now if they don't think that they're going to be able to sign him, which some of the figures that I saw, you know, 40, 45 million a year, it's crazy, but that's how scary things could be next year. So I don't know. I mean, I'm basically riding the fence on this. If the Cardinals hadn't already have gotten, Ozuna, I would still think this was probably a bad move just to get him for the 1 year. Well, with Ozuna now, I still think you could, I think you could roll the dice a little bit more to get him in, and you guys, and that could be really good next year. He could still ultimately leave, but at least you made your shot. Selfishly, if he were to come in, I would really hate hearing, hey, will he re-sign all year next year? And then if he doesn't, have to deal with it with Ozuna the next year, you know, the whole year, because that just gets tiring. It felt like we did it all year with Lynn this year.
And that's fair. I mean, that is going to be a situation that's going to linger, assuming the Cardinals can't, you know, sign him to an extension early on. And the longer, of course, that runs on, the less likely it is that, that an extension is going to happen, I guess. I feel like most people really do think that the Cardinals need something else besides Ozuna. As good as his bat, power bat may be, you know, having another something, either another potential batter or maybe even a top of the rotation pitcher, Cardinals still need something that they haven't done all the work. Again, I guess I kind of ask you the same thing. Is it worth, you know, giving up some significant quality of prospects to get a guy like this into St. Louis?
Well, first of all, I agree that I think the Cardinals still are a move away from being where they need to be, particularly to keep up with the Cubs. Now, we've talked several times about whether you can make up that difference with pitching. That's an option, but not if you think the rotation is, quote, fine as it is. But that's beside the point. To the Machado point, it's a fascinating conversation to me because, as you said, this wasn't really something that seemed to be a realistic, pursuit for the Cardinals, much less really anyone this offseason. But you, as you said, you get a bunch of GMs in a room and they start talking and all of a sudden, it appears Machado's available for the right price. I don't know that for the Cardinals, the right price comes without more of a guarantee that they'll be able to sign him long term. It's a lot to give up. I mean, we're hearing names like Reyes and Weaver, and to give that many innings for the next, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 10 years, to give that many innings up for 1 year and the possibility of winning him over for a free agency deal, that's just, it's a huge price tag. And I say that as someone who has for the last two seasons been saying, hey, yeah, prospects are great, but when they're sitting in the minor league, they're not doing you any good. So for me to say it's too high a price, the sticking point for me is that it's only for a season. There's no guarantee after that. And maybe I'm still a little bit burned by the Hayward situation, although that has seemed to work out all right in the long run. But it's just, that's a huge risk without even the slightest glimmer of a guarantee. So, I don't know. I think you're talking about two of those big pitching, potential superstars for the Cardinals. That's a lot. That's a lot to give up for someone, who, yes, would change the face of the organization and easily be that piece that gives you the kind of offseason that we've all been hoping for. But it's, you know, at what price? And that's the question that the Cardinals have had to ask themselves. And it seems that they might feel like that's a little bit too high to go at this point.
And and again, I cannot believe that. I mean, Alex Reyes and Luke Weaver in the same deal. That's not. I can't believe that's even being discussed. I don't think it is. I know Frank Cusimano is the only person I've seen mention that, and then I think he retracted it, and I gotta say, I've never thought Frank Cusimano is some investigative journalist with huge sources. So, you know, Weaver and, you know, what if it's Weaver and Hudson? What if it's Weaver and Flaherty? I mean, you do have a gap there, but maybe you go out and you say, hey, we're going for broke. We sign a Yu Darvish or something of that nature. It would seem unlikely you could make a Tampa Bay trade if you're giving up the right prospects. But maybe, I mean, who knows what Tampa Bay's looking for. You know, maybe you can do that. You know,
but that's the flip side of that for me, is that similar to what Alan said, the Cardinals still need pitching. So if you're giving away major league ready pitching, you've got to be able to fill that in somewhere else. And it's not as if they don't have some depth in that area, but they don't have a known commodity that can sort of anchor that pitching staff in a lot of ways. So when you start taking away some of those backup plans, it gets pretty dicey if you're not planning on replacing it.
And not to angle away from this, but that very thing you just said makes me think they're playing coy on the starting market. I think Archer may be more in play than we think.
Because I there's sure a lot of the stuff.
Well, and they never, think about it, they never go into season short of innings. You know, that's just that under the Mozeliak regime, they've never done that. And it makes me think that they do have something up their sleeve, and that there's a lot of moving parts on the Tampa deal. I honestly, man, this is maybe just reaching for the stars. I think Nicasio picked Seattle because he knew that Colomé was coming.
Well,
you know, I think industry sources are wide enough to where he probably thought that was the case.
And yeah, we'll get to that. I'm not done with Machado yet. Cause I'm,
wasn't
I'm,
me this time.
I know. I'm clinging on to the pipe dream, I guess is what I'm going to say. You know, and I wrote about this earlier this week, actually right before the Machado stuff came out, just about how the Cardinals cannot get, you know, we've talked so much about needing that core piece. The guy to build around, the Pujols, the whatever. And the Cardinals obviously can't develop those guys, or have not had any luck developing those guys yet. So getting them in via trade or free agency is the only option, and free agency is not really that much of an option. They don't sign these guys. They've tried to sign these guys, and they're making more of an effort to sign these guys. But they're still not coming. And take it for whatever it's worth. But, you know, they've never been able to really lock down free agents on a real basis. But, and again, I will admit you have to go back a ways to do it. But the trade and sign has been very effective. Because you get him into the organization, you see what it's like, and then you go say, hey, we were going to spend $300 million on Stanton. Why don't we give it to you instead? And see what that does to him. Again, I don't know that it makes the most baseball sense. But I do think it's one of the only times that you can get a superstar. Anchor, the face of your franchise for the next whatever it's going to be.
And I guess that's sort of, well, first of all, that's why they paid Jim Mozeliak and Mike Gersh to make those decisions and not me.
Right.
But if they want some free advice, I'm more than happy to offer it. No, but I think that's the part of this that is why I said I think it's a fascinating conversation, because I'll find myself in a conversation about Machado 1 minute and I'm saying, look, this is the only chance you have to get a player like this. Go do whatever it takes. And then 10 minutes later, I'm thinking, that's a lot of innings and a lot of control on some young players. That's a lot that I don't know if you can take that risk for 1 year. But there's so many layers to it that makes it very complex. And I think that's why it's such a big deal. And also, can I just say, when the White Sox emerged as the team with the next best offer, so my dog does this thing when he hears a sound that he doesn't recognize, and he kind of just like tilts his head and looks at you funny. That's what I did when I was like, wait, the White Sox?
Well, to be
fair. What are they doing?
Well, to be fair, I mean, it's basically any prospect that's worth anything. Has to go through the White Sox
right.
in the last 2 years. So they've got everybody. So, you know, in theory, I mean, I can see them paying the price, but you're
right. But they're going to trade Machado to play with a bunch of minor leaguers for a couple of years they're good at anything?
Either that or it feels like, a lot of people feel like, and I don't know if this is because I think it's a kind of a really risky gamble that probably wouldn't pay off, but they think that the White Sox would trade for him and then flip him.
Trade him for more prospects.
Right. Maybe closer to the deadline. But I just don't know. I mean, I think you're more likely
just
to get...
a weird thing. Yeah.
I mean, are you going to get enough for a guy that's going to spend 2 months in your organization and then definitely he'll be a free agent? How are you going to, you know, what could you get for him in July? That's why the Orioles are looking forward to trading him now. So, I don't know. All right. Well, as much as I'd love to have Manny Machado on this team, issues notwithstanding, that does not, you know, the Cardinals have also said publicly, which you could take for what I thought because they said this, and then we find out they've actually made an offer. but they're not really excited about the 1 year deal, and that's not the kind of way they want to go. So the other thing out there is a deal with Tampa Bay, and it seems, depending on who you talk to, have a lot of different permutations. Like Alan said, Alex Colome, seems to be, it feels like he's already a Cardinal, the way that the things have been talked about.
But I mean, if you base, your opinion on Instagram follows, then, it's a done deal.
Absolutely. And I'm just very disappointed he didn't pick up us, while he was.
I mean, he and Yadier Molina are obviously really close and they announce things on Instagram, so he'll fit right in.
That's right. See, there you go. and when he's aggravated about not getting a save, we'll know where to look.
He'll unfollow the Cardinals for a day. And everyone will panic.
But, and then, there's also possibilities, of Evan Longoria and then also Chris Archer, which obviously is the headline grabber as Tara was talking about earlier. But Alan, you brought up Tampa Bay first. We'll go with you. I mean, what do you think is the most likely outcome of this, if there is a likely outcome?
The low-hanging fruit in the deal would probably seem to be Colome Longoria. But like we talked about, I don't think Archer's name gets hung out there like it does, and the Cardinals not bite on that a little bit, just because of the workload. I mean, they're going to be short of innings. And, you know, I understand they made the signing and, the Michaelis signing, and that's going to, they're impressed with him, but they could use another frontline guy. And that's where it kind of makes sense. And that's one of those deals where you could see them moving a Weaver, a Reyes, and a Flaherty pretty easy if you can get those innings back. The reason I say Longoria now is I think that may be one of the contracts that they want to move. That's what makes the three of them being Colome, Archer, Longoria, so interesting, is they're all up against money. But Archer has such a team-friendly contract, he probably has drawn a lot of interest from that. But as much as I'd love to see Archer, I would think that Colome is what it's centered around, and in order to get him, you could get Longoria, who's a great secondary bat. I know a lot of people are worried about age. I still think he would compete if he came here, and I think it would be a good pickup. So that's the angle that I figured that it's going. And you're right. All signs point to Colome closing for the Cardinals next year. And, I mean, it's funny. I don't know how many of the Tampa Bay – I follow quite a few of the Tampa Bay guys, and the main – like Topkin is basically there, Gould. And he was acting like a deal was going to get done today. Well, then he came out with a tweet today that said, well, it doesn't sound like it's going to be today. Both organizations have left, but look out for it tomorrow. And then he quoted Gould on some of it. So I was like, well, there's almost too much smoke now. Now you kind of realize that that's where it is. And then they're trying to figure out where everything else goes, which I would assume hearing back from Machado is probably a big part of it if they're playing in that game. So it's going to be interesting. Tara, I saw that you commented on this. Someone had said, hey, you know, this 24-hour to 48-hour window, I hope the two deals they weren't talking about were the Piscotty deal and the Gregerson past physical. I get the feeling that's not what it is. I don't know if you guys heard. Did you guys hear Mozeliak on the countdown to do a spring training show with Raby and Claiborne?
No.
I did not.
If you didn't, it was very out of character. You could tell that he was happy about something. He was joking around and he was just a different demeanor. Well, then the next day I saw Matheny on set. He was the same way and he also made the comment about looking for bats. And then Mo was on that night and he was smiling and cutting up. Now you were like, they have a lot of things going on right now and a lot of things are pointing in their favor. So I just can't imagine it just being Ozuna at this point. You know, I think that they've got a lot of irons in the fire and it's going to be interesting to see how it turns out.
Yeah, Mo was probably actually just glad because he'd stuck, you know, Gersh with some sort of menial task that he didn't have to do anymore because he's a GM. He's not a GM. So, I think that there's something to that. I don't know. I think it'll be – I mean, what do you think, Tara? Do you think that that's is there too much smoke?
You know, I think – I feel like there are a lot of layers to this that, as you mentioned, Alan, sort of center around what the Machado thing ends up being, mm-hmm. if it ends up being. If the Rays want Longoria to be in the deal because they want to move Longoria, that sort of muddies the waters a little bit as far as, now suddenly you have 742 infielders as well. that's fine, I guess. But I would imagine that some of the pieces in play in a potential Tampa Bay deal also are the pieces in play for a Machado deal. So it could just be that there was some tension today and Tampa Bay wanted to get a deal done and the Cardinals said, well, we're not quite there yet. And they left it at that. But I just want to say, I know that the Cardinals desperately need a closer, but I really, really like Chris Archer. yeah. I think that he brings so much of what this team needs as far as the pitching is concerned. And I feel like I am a broken record at this point, but how long has it been since the Cardinals had a legitimate 1A, 1B top of the rotation punch like you would get with Carlos Martinez and Chris Archer? I mean, I can't express how much I miss the Chris Carpenter, Adam Wainwright days of old in the recent past. And you can pick a dynamic duo like that through just about all of the times where the Cardinals have been pretty extraordinary. They don't have that right now. If you look at the way that the rotation lines up as it is, Carlos Martinez is going to be good. He's still a bit of a wild card because he's still in the very early stages of his potentially very long career. But he's clearly the best piece that the Cardinals have. But you go on from there, and yeah, you've got Mike Mikolas, who is fine but not spectacular. You've got Adam Wainwright, who is a giant question mark at this point. You have Luke Weaver, who's capable of being spectacular, but he's also not pitched as many innings as he's going to be expected to pitch as a major league starter. And then, you know, you fill in. And yes, Reyes is an option. Yes, you have some guys who can come up and, but like I said, you don't have a known commodity to fit into that second spot in the rotation. And we've seen these playoff teams that have those two guys back to back that can be that 1-2 punch and how that dramatically changes the dynamic of a series. And, you know, I think if the Cardinals are not going to go out and get somebody like Machado, and they're going to try to do it on the pitching end, they have to go out and get somebody that's another level than Miles Mikolas.
And I think that, I mean, you knock on wood, you don't know how it's going to turn out, but if you got an Archer and you can line up your pitching rotation, you know, in a playoff series, especially a short series, Carlos Martinez, Chris Archer, and then Alex Reyes, I mean, that's good.
So good. Probably.
I mean, again, we don't know how Reyes is going to come back from this. You know, Reyes is right now still kind of all reputation. Although we have seen why he has that reputation at times, but there's still a lot of question marks around Reyes as well, like there are around most everybody. But if you could, if that could be, you know, so potent, in a short series especially, but even in a long one, and then you fill out fill out with a Weaver or a Wainwright if he's healthy, and, or a Walker if he's going well, and, I mean, there's a lot of different things there, so. I like Archer, and I agree. I think that, I don't think you take on, and I hate to say it because I really like Evan Longoria as a player, but it also seems to be, you know, he's 32. He's got, I think, 5 years left on his contract. He's past his baseball prime, if you will. I don't know that you take him on unless you're taking on a, you know, unless it's to help, you take on that salary to help a deal for the other two. Now, again, I would not be stunned if all this talk and all this smoke just winds up to be, you know, a couple of minor league pitchers or for Colomi. I mean, that, I do think he's going to come. I think the Cardinals know that. I think the Cardinals know that no matter what happens, they've got the pieces to get him. Even if they go out and trade for Machado, you know, they can still go get him. I just feel like that, and it's just trying to decide what else they want out of that deal.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, again, I don't think you do a Longoria and a Colomi because I don't think Longoria brings you enough. I mean, you know, I was kind of talking to somebody tonight, and it's like, is he really an upgrade over Jed Jerko? And, you know, he's got name recognition. His glove definitely is. I mean, I love his glove. But overall, is he a better, you know, for the cost and everything else, is he better than Jed Jerko? I don't know that you can make that argument very well. And maybe you can, but I don't think it's a very, it's not an obvious argument, let's put it that way. So I don't know. I mean, Alan, what do you think? I mean, are they going to get, what are they going to do?
I really like Jerko, but I really like 120, 130 game max Jerko. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, I think he would maximize really well in the role that he was designed to do, and that's play two or three different positions and get his bat in the lineup four or five times a week, but not, you know, not be the guy, the man at any position. Mm-hmm. But last year I said the same thing. I almost didn't want them to get Donaldson for that same reason. I was like, well, you're not much of an upgrade over Jerko. So that's the thing that's kind of torn on me. But here's my thing with Longoria. I still think even at 32, he comes to a winning ball club, and I bet he's got some gas left in the tank. Just kind of like that Marco Scudero, like, kick the Giants got for a couple years. That's what I figured that he would bring. But you're right. I think that there's that fine line of both of us, we've all kind of gave the pluses and minuses on the one-year deal, and to me, the one-year deal, the negatives outweigh the pluses. But do you really want to go 5 years that's going to push a guy to 37 years old? And that's definitely out of their comfort zone that they've never done before.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I can tell you to get them both, I would not be disappointed. To get all three, I would be elated.
I think if you take Longoria to also get Archer, then it's brilliant.
Right, yeah, right.
You know, if getting Colomé and Archer comes with Longoria, then absolutely. I don't know that Longoria is a key piece of the deal in any way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just pull up both Longoria and Jerko. According to Baseball Reference, they both had 3.6 WAR last year. And funnily enough, at least to me, Jed Jerko had a better defensive WAR than Longoria, and I don't think anybody would have ever guessed that. Now,
of course
he
did.
Yeah, of course he did. You know, I don't know. Like you said, I mean, Longoria is probably a 270 hitter with 20 home runs, and that's valuable. There's something there. But, you know, again, we've seen the basically that out of Jerko last year. And, you know, I don't know, 270 may be high for Jerko and more average for Longoria, but age is not going to help that either. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think that's going to is if it's get them all, you know, get the pitching, improve your defense in theory, and take on a bigger contract so you don't have to give up as many prospects because it's money you have. But, I don't know. Now, before, to wrap this up, I guess there is that one other option, as Alan mentioned, as the Cardinals continue to ask Toronto about Josh Donaldson. However, it feels like Toronto keeps taking these calls and saying, Mo, listen, Mo, no, quit, Mo, we're not trading Donaldson, no, no, we're not trading Donaldson. Toronto still feels, now, I don't know if they feel like they're going to contend now that the Yankees have gotten Stanton and whoever else they may do, but they don't feel like they are motivated to sell Donaldson, which may mean if they're not motivated to sell him, the price is ridiculously high if the Cardinals do try to do that. Tara, is this something that the Cardinals need to leave best alone?
I can see a scenario where we spend the next 2 or 3 days talking about Tampa Bay and Machado, and then the Cardinals announce a Donaldson deal.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that I could see happening. Although, I would say I would not be super thrilled about that. I'm not real high on Donaldson as far as he fits into the Cardinals puzzle. And I think we've sort of tackled a lot of that with some of these other pieces that we've talked about. But, and again, I think if the asking price is, that high, that, I don't know that it makes a lot of sense, but, it would be very John Mozeliak to pursue all of these other things publicly while privately, getting that deal in place.
Fair enough. yeah, I would agree. It feels like Machado might be cheaper than Donaldson. If you're going to get a guy that's only going to be around for 1 year, go get that guy. But there seems to be a huge, I don't know, a real excitement about Donaldson around the free front office, assuming all these rumors and buzz that we hear are somewhat true. All right, well, we have covered pretty much everything, I think, and we've done it in about an hour. So I guess we'll wrap it here. Tara, any last thoughts? Any interesting things you're going to be doing anytime soon? Any last words for our listeners?
Is that a subtle way of asking me when a new Birdseeds is coming out?
I'm
picking up what you're throwing down. Look, if the Cardinals go out and finalize some of these deals, I will absolutely do that. But unfortunately, the responsibilities of real life have been pretty dominating as of late. So hopefully in the Christmas time frame, I'm trying to give myself as much time to work with as possible here, there will be something new coming out.
Well, hopefully so. Alan?
I have some ideas. I have some, obviously, some content. So it's just a matter of, you know, the time working out.
Which... You know, you had some, you know, you did shows with much less this year, so.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Alan, you got anything? Any last thoughts? Any last, you know, promotions? Anything of that nature?
Well, I feel like we didn't give Luke Gregerson enough love to come back to St. Louis, but... Bullpen piece, I'm all about getting as many veteran arms as you can to get outs, and that's all. I've got a piece that I'm working on. It actually, this is my busy time of the year at work as well, so it works out well now that the Cardinals, that I feel like they're going to be pretty active at least through the next week or two. But after the first of the year, I'm going to roll out a deal I kind of did last year and kind of break down the lineup as I would like to see it and where I think that would be most beneficial to them. But like I said, this time with me being busy and with the Cardinals being active, I get to push it off, because if I did a lineup piece this week, it may be completely different next week.
Oh, absolutely. I think we saw that with Kyle. Was talking about a couple of things that he had worked up that got scrapped when prospects left and came back. So it's definitely not worth locking much down right now. So
I think we could all be proud of how they follow through on their word to be active.
Yeah, and I still think that, like we all said, they still need to do a little bit more, but
yeah.
It's a better off season than we've seen at times. And they've filling some pieces. Like you said, I don't think Gregerson's the final piece to the bullpen puzzle. I don't think he's a closer. I don't think anything like that, but he's going to be a guy that you know, one, Matheny's probably going to trust, for better or for worse. but also a guy that
can we just apologize to him now for that?
Yeah.
when your arm literally falls off in July.
Yeah, that's...
can we just apologize on behalf of the Cardinals?
But I think, I think a guy that's, he's been there, and I think that he's got a lot, he was down last year, but I think there's a good chance he won't be, and a seventh inning guy, it sounds good to me. We'll see, but again, we'll see how they finalize and do. All right, well, I guess that'll do it for us. Tara and I will be back on Gateway, sometime in January. Alan and I, I don't know if we'll get a show in after Christmas or not. We'll see how things go. We still got to get through those favorite Cardinals, so we may try to put something together then. But for Tara and for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!